Some plants seem to thrive no matter what the condition, the location, the amount of care you give them. Others seem to be disease magnets. And we're lucky to have a couple of experts here today to help you and I figure out what went on in our gardens this year and with our trees and shrubs and how to avoid some of the bad things next time around. Larry Mueller here. Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. Brian Huddleston is the director of the Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic at UW-Madison, the Department of Plant Pathology, and as he's often called, Dr. Death. Brian, welcome back.
Thank you. And my favorite holiday of the year. I'm on the radio. I'm really psyched today.
I'm glad to have you back. And Laura Joe looks pretty psyched, too.
Yeah, it's my favorite holiday, too.
Laura,
and I'm known as the tree hugger.
She's the tree hugger, professor and extension specialist for woody ornamentals. Yeah, the woody ornamental hugger doesn't sound very... The tree hugger sounds pretty good, but the woody ornamental hugger...
So it's the Dr. Death tree hugger show.
She is, of course, with the Department of Horticulture, professor at UW-Madison, and obviously it's great to have both of them back. They've been with us many times, and certainly if you have questions about your trees or shrubs or maybe diseases that may have come up, or maybe you've got some right now on some of your flowers indoors, give us a call. Number's 1-800-642-1234. Can also email us at talk@wpr.org. And go to our Facebook page as well. The Facebook page title is The Larry Mueller Show. You can go there and you can post a photo. Maybe you've got a plant photo or even a garden photo. If you've got a garden you're proud of, hey, put a photo in there. But you can also put a question there. That's at The Larry Mueller Show. Email at talk@wpr.org. And already some callers online. But Laura, just to start with, just because I think the timing is pretty good, is it not for pruning shrubs, trees and shrubs?
Well, the one problem with pruning right now is if it flowers in the spring, you're going to be removing flower buds.
Okay, so not a good idea for some things.
For some things, yeah. Dormant season pruning is the best time of year to prune. Usually we recommend in late winter, early spring for pruning. And yes, you can prune flowering shrubs at time, but realize you're removing some flower buds. I like dormant season pruning because then I can see the architecture of the plant. Plant diseases and insects aren't active yet. And most importantly, the mosquitoes are not active yet.
that's a good thing to have. What about disease? Let's take a look at that. The year, as you think back over the summer, was it a terrible year for plant diseases, Brian?
I just gave a talk at the Wisconsin Arborist Association meeting, and I basically said, from my perspective, it was kind of a boring year because we didn't see anything really that new and different. The one thing that I have to comment on was that I saw a lot of samples coming into the clinic where trees were dying back, and it had nothing to do with disease. We've had several years of really extreme weather, all the way back to 2012 when we had drought. We had a very long, harsh winter, and I think a lot of our trees and shrubs that were, at least those that were coming into the clinic, were experiencing problems because of that.
So some things we can talk about. I'm sure Jane in Wayzata, Minnesota, has a question for you. So let's go to her. Jane, thanks a lot for waiting. Hi.
Hi, I have some boxwood trees on the north side of my house, little shrubs, and I had to replant them all this spring because they were frozen. Should I wrap them in burlap or something this winter or just let them be?
Okay, my first question is, I'm not familiar where Wayzata is in Minnesota. Do you know your cold hardiness zone?
I think it's 4.5. It's in the Minneapolis Twin Cities area.
Okay, all right. That gives me a better idea. I was going to say, if you were in northern Minnesota, the boxwoods are real iffy up there, but where you're located, you can grow boxwood. Do you happen to know what cultivars they were?
Oh, shoot. I don't. I'm sorry.
Okay. No, that's fine.
Chicago. I think they're Chicago boxwood, but I'm not positive.
Okay. Typically, the newer boxwoods that have been released from Sheridan Nursery in Canada they were bred for increased cold hardiness to the point where you didn't have to wrap them in winter. However, if they're newly planted, I say the first year you should wrap them in burlap to keep the windburn down. Also, having them sufficiently watered in the fall is critical. up until the ground freezes, because broadleaf evergreens and all evergreens, they continue to desiccate or lose water from their leaves all throughout winter versus stuff that is deciduous that loses its leaves in fall. If you do burlap, do more of like a tent around the plants versus wrapping them so tight that they can't move. You don't need to create a mummy, but you're trying to deflect the wind off of them. But the most important thing is watering and making sure there's good drainage, because they won't tolerate wet feet either.
And when you wrap, would you be wrapping now, or would you wait until after freezing? Or?
Yeah, around Thanksgiving time is when I do it.
All right.
Gives you something to do that weekend.
When would you take it off? I tend to tell folks to take it off relatively early, because you don't want to leave that when there's a lot of moisture in the air and it's a little warmer.
Sure, usually end of March.
Yeah, somewhere around March, end of March. There you go, Jane.
Great, thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Peter in Kansasville, Wisconsin, it is your turn. Thank you for calling.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
Great.
Hey, I have some black locusts. I'm not sure if they're actually trees or shrubs. They're along my ditch line, and they grow, and they're very beautiful, and they've been cut down to nothing by the county before, but they've gotten really tall, and I'm wondering just how I can prune them back so they stay a little shorter and, you know, bush out real good but not get so tall.
Okay, first thing, black locusts are a large tree, and I do not recommend topping any tree. Second of all, black locusts, the city is probably cutting them back because they're so invasive. It is a very invasive plant. It spreads by seed and it spreads by root suckers. So personally, I would get rid of it at the basal line and treat the stump with a systemic herbicide that will get down to the root system. If you're destined to keep it, you can do selective pruning back to a lateral branch or a lateral bud. But do not top a tree where you're cutting indiscriminately and leaving internodal cuts. That's, you know, black locusts get 50, 60 feet tall. That's what they're supposed to do. And they're not a small tree.
Yeah. So there you go.
Gotten pretty big.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. These big thorns on them too, which are very dangerous.
Yeah. So. You might, I'd be tempted to take Laura's advice and cut it off right at the base. Do a little pruning right there with a chainsaw and be done with it. Thanks a lot for calling. You know, the other one, just as an aside, here we were, I was talking about how beautiful burning bushes are and
invasive.
You know, in the fall, and you know, I was reminded that that also is an invasive plant.
Oh, yeah.
And needs to be eliminated, too.
Or select cultivars that don't fruit very much, if any.
Yeah, there are some out there.
You know, there's been research done at University of Connecticut, and they've not found one yet that is totally seedless.
Yeah.
Even though they're described as being less fruit, they're still produce some. But they're working on it.
They're working on it, and they are pretty plants. And, you know, somebody said, well, what else have we got in the that's red and bright red in the fall, and the Japanese maple is one of those that the weeping variety.
Well, the weeper is not reliably cold hardy here.
Oh,
you can grow it in Madison in protected locations, but our last winter, a lot of them died.
Oh,
but the cultivar that's the most hardy is Emperor One, and Emperor One, it's actually what. Why I like it is it tends to leaf out a week, if not 2 weeks later than some of the other cultivars. So if we have a late frost, which often happens in April, it hasn't leafed out yet, whereas some of the other ones did.
Okay, well, I saw one in our neighborhood, and it just looked
They're beautiful.
Beautiful.
Yeah. They're
absolutely
beautiful.
Until the verticillium takes them out, that's the other thing.
Oh, that's the other thing with them?
Yeah, they're very susceptible to verticillium wilt. I always joke that the Japanese maples see verticillium in the soil and commit suicide because they die so rapidly from it. But I agree with Laura. We had a lot of Japanese maple that came into the clinic early on, and we saw a combination. Some of them had verticillium wilt, but a lot of them looked like they had cold injury, and then we get canker fungi that come in and cause additional branch dieback.
Yeah. You can grow them in Milwaukee, Racine, Kenosha, even up into Green Bay and Madison, but that's about it in the state. You really have to protect them.
Dolores and Cudahy, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. I joined in late, so I'm not sure if you folks answered this or not yet. But I have one of those bridal wreaths. I don't know what the botanical name is. But it's a Rose of Sharon. And I Googled that, and it said to do that in midwinter, and that didn't make sense to me.
Okay.
And then the bridal bush, it said in spring.
Okay.
So what's your advice?
Okay, for the Rose of Sharon, that's a hibiscus species. It's a hardy hibiscus. That flowers in the summer. So the time to prune it is late winter, early spring, before it sets its flower buds for that summer. It actually doesn't set them until next early spring.
Spring, okay.
Now, for bridal wreath, that is a spirea, the bridal wreath spirea, and it is absolutely gorgeous in flower. And if you prune it now, you are removing the flower buds, and it's mainly a one-week show plant and then not much to look at the rest of the year. So I would wait until that one is done flowering. Right after flowering, don't wait until midsummer, because the flower buds are already set for next spring in this late summer.
Oh, there you go.
Okay, that's why I was confused, because last year it was trimmed down really low, and it just was beautiful this year. It looked like a snowfall. You couldn't mm-hmm. see any green. And it usually blossoms in very early spring, and then the Rose of Sharon, that blossoms in August. Mm-hmm. It's really late.
Yeah.
So I wanted to do it in fall, but you're saying wait until afterward?
For the bridal wreath, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, because last year it was pruned at this time, and it was prettier than ever, so that's where my confusion was, because I Googled it.
There you go. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Maxine and Marinette, hello. Thank you for calling.
Well, thank you for taking my call. I have a linden tree. I believe we planted it about maybe 7-8 years ago, and it was doing just beautiful. And this year, well, it looks diseased. The leaves, well before we got frost, were all curled. And it almost looked like it had some sort of some sort of a parasite on the leaves. And it is planted near where we had cut down a walnut tree well over 10 years ago. So wondering if I'm going to lose it, or what can I do?
Yeah, by curled, was there a lot of growth distortion? Was there browning on the leaves? Did you notice any bumps on the leaves?
Yes, they were kind of bumpy.
Yeah, it could very well be. There are lots of insects that will lay eggs in leaves, and that induces what's called a gall to form. So it's kind of a lump of plant tissue that will form around the developing larva. And so that could be what you're dealing with. If that's the case, then it's pretty much a cosmetic problem. Once you start to see those galls, it's well beyond the point where you would do any sort of insecticide treatment. And typically, these sorts of insects cause cosmetic problems. They aren't detrimental long-term to the tree. So it's not something to really worry about. You may see them recur next year. You might not. It oftentimes depends on the particular year and whether or not that insect is around.
But it wasn't just a few leaves. Mm-hmm. The whole tree.
Yeah, it can be over the entire tree. That's very common with some of these insect galls. So I would just hold off at this point and see whether the tree leafs out normally. Did you see any browning at all on the leaves?
Somewhat.
Okay. You could get some of that from the galls as well. There are also some leaf diseases you might see. But again, any of those sorts of things, I would suggest just clean up the leaves really, really well this fall and get them away from the tree. And Laura, you said something else you thought might be an issue.
Japanese beetles love lindens.
Yeah.
And they like to skeletonize the leaves, and they'll turn brown. They'll eat a lot of the leaf tissue but leave some of the veins behind. And I know our street, the lindens looked paper bag brown by August because of Japanese beetles feeding on the foliage.
That sounds like it.
Yeah, did the leaves look really lacy?
Not really.
Okay. Because usually with Japanese beetle, they'll look very, very lacy.
Like a skeleton.
No, like a skeleton.
Just that they were really curled.
Okay.
Huh? All right.
Was any turf herbicide put down?
Yeah, that was my other thought as well. Is there anyone around in your area that might have been applying herbicides at all?
Well, that's a possibility.
And certainly we do see drifts sometimes that will cause distortions. I wouldn't expect the galls to form with that, but you could get leaves that look very odd in terms of their shape. Usually the exposures are non-lethal, and so you'll get this very weird-looking growth, but it doesn't cause any real long-term...
Doesn't
kill it. It's not a long-term issue.
There you go. All right. Maxine, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Taking a look at plant diseases, and we're also looking at care of your woody ornamentals with Brian Huddleston and Laura Jell of the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Brian directs the Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic at the UW in the Department of Plant Pathology. Laura is a professor in the Department of Horticulture, specialist in woody ornamentals in that department. I'm Larry Mueller. Judith Sears Poisson, our producer for Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for listening in on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this edition of Garden Talk. Just to let you know, next week on Garden Talk, Barb Larson's going to come by. She'll tell us if we can still get anything in the ground yet this year. Right now, talking with Brian Huddleston and Laura Jell about garden diseases and care for your woody ornamentals. Call in at 800-642-1234, email at talk@wpr.org, or post on our Facebook page. Go to the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page, and you can post questions, photos, whatever, right there. And speaking of emails, we had one from Lisa in Eau Claire. I have winterberry bushes in front, three with berries, and one female and one without. The landlord had his people come to prune, and they got butchered. The male one is cut down to the ground, and the other barely have any stems left, but they still do have berries. Is there anything I should do now or wait and see what the damage is next spring and summer?
That's really unfortunate that they had somebody who didn't know how to prune them, because that's not the way you prune winterberries. Winterberry is a holly species, and it is native to Wisconsin. And it normally is found growing in thickets, and it tends to sucker from the root system and produce new branches, but very slowly. It's not a fast-growing species, especially in the landscape. It tends to be slower growing. So I would wait until next spring, see if the male even leaves out. They might have cut too much off that there's no buds left, and if it doesn't leaf out, you're going to have to replace, or your landlord will have to replace it with a male. Also, with the females that still have some fruit but are really butchered, you know, it's since the plant grows so slowly, you're just going to have to kind of baby it along. You know, fertilizer, a slow release fertilizer would help, but not until early spring. And you would put it around the base of the plants. There's lots of them on the market. But, yeah, that's not how you prune winterberry.
Unfortunately.
It's too bad. It's a nice plant.
Email from Bill in Prairie du Sac, and he says, I have a bur oak tree in my yard that appeared to have dead and deteriorating bark on the trunk this summer. When I pulled back the loose bark, I discovered about a quarter to a third of the circumference is dead. Around the base of the tree, it apparently has been dead for some years, but is healing over from each side. Should I remove all the loose, dead, decaying bark this winter, or so the underlying wood is not hiding, you know, rot or whatever, and let it continue to heal over? The tree does have old damage from wind and lightning years ago and has hollow areas. Some upper branch tips have died in over the years, but overall it seems healthy and recovering. Like a good bur oak should.
Mm-hmm.
They're hardy, pretty hardy trees.
Oh, yeah. They're native. They're wonderful prairie trees. Yeah. When I first started reading your email, the first thing that popped into my mind was something called smooth patch. You see that sometimes on oaks, but now that you're mentioning it's down around the base of the tree, it sounds like there was some rotting.
Yeah, it makes me think of our malaria root disease, which is a fungal disease that we see on a variety of woody ornamentals, and oaks are a great host for that particular fungus. I would check in that area where the bark is loose and see whether you see kind of a whitish layer of growth on the hardwood, because that fungus will produce what's called a mycelial fan, and then you get these little root-like structures that the fungus produces. And those are kind of like feelers that grow out into the soil searching for other trees. And if you see anything of that sort, the tree should really be removed, because that fungus can be quite aggressive and can cause damage on a variety of trees and shrubs. And as long as you've got a substantive portion of that tree still there, you're going to have that fungus active, and it can potentially cause problems elsewhere in the landscape.
Yeah.
And, you know, with that much loose bark, I'm not sure how much that's really going to recover. It may be weakened to the point where it could potentially be a hazard to be blown over in a wind. That really needs to be properly evaluated, I think, and having a certified arborist come out mm-hmm. and take a look at the tree would be my suggestion.
And there is a website of a list of certified arborists for hire in Wisconsin. It's on the Wisconsin Arborist Association website. And when you get to that website, you click on Certified Arborist for Hire, and you can search by your county of what certified arborists are available in your area. I highly encourage you to hire a certified arborist because they have gone through testing and they have to have a number of years job experience, and they know what they're doing versus somebody yeah. just out of a phone book.
Yep, there you go. Thanks very much for that question. Let's turn to Robin in Portage next. Robin, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Larry and guests. Thank you much for taking my call.
Sure thing.
I have two questions as far as cutting branches. Northern privet. Can you trim that any time of the year?
I'm not sure what you mean by northern privet. I don't know northern privet. I know Regal's border privet. And I know of some other privets. Privets are kind of iffy, and I'm not sure. Oh, I see. You're in Portage. So, yeah, they're cold hardy in Portage.
Yep.
But farther north, you'll get a lot of dieback, and they're also invasive. I tend to encourage people to shear them, to shear off the fruit, because the birds eat the fruit, they fly away, they deposit the seed, and it can come up. Now, Regal's border privet is probably the one you have, and most people do shear it into a hedge, and there shouldn't be problems with invasiveness because you're shearing off the flower and fruit.
Mm-hmm. It has not invaded at this point, and I've had it for, oh my gosh, 20, 30 years.
Yeah, yeah. Now, that usually we recommend shearing for shrubs that get sheared. And most flowering plants, we don't recommend shearing because you're cutting off the flower buds, but in this case, privet is grown mainly as a tight hedge, so you're not interested in the flowers and fruit. Mm-hmm. And that should be done right after the full leaf expansion in spring, after the new growth is flushed. Then you can bring it back to the height that you want. In terms of crab apples, best time of year is dormant season pruning, but do remember you are removing some flower buds. But with all the disease issues that crab apples get, and Brian's nodding his head.
Yeah.
Yeah. They should be pruned dormant season.
Yeah. Yeah.
They should be pruned when? I'm sorry?
When it's dormant.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When
so
they're dormant.
Winter. Late winter, early spring. Before it leaves out.
Yep.
Okay. So not now.
No.
Okay.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Crab apples. Yeah, there's...
I love crab apples, but depending upon the variety, they can have some serious disease issues. Fire blight can be an issue. Apple scab can be a real issue, and that's not lethal, but it can make the trees so ugly you wish they were dead.
Yeah.
You have to be very careful with variety selection.
We had one with apple scab, and the leaves, it was with leafless, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
Just when you want the leaves, it was never...
Yeah.
But, of course, some of them bloom so spectacularly in the spring
right.
that you will... put up with them losing their leaves later on in the summer because the flower is so spectacular.
Yeah.
The flowers only last a week.
Yeah, that's true. But it can be quite a show.
Kay in Marshfield, hi. Thanks for calling.
Yeah. I'm wondering when I can prune my spirea.
Okay. It depends on which type of spirea you have.
Yeah. I don't know.
When does it flower?
Quite early in spring.
In spring? Okay.
Yes.
Someone had called previously about like bridal wreath spirea. Some of the early flowering spireas, because they only are in flower for about a week and you wait all year to see them in bloom, I would wait until right after they're done flowering and then prune. If it was a Japanese spirea, that flowers in summer, and that's a different type of pruning altogether. Japanese spirea, they can be pruned in early spring, and you will not interrupt the flower show for that summer. But the other spireas have already set their flower buds for next spring.
There you go.
Clematis still has 4 open blossoms on the Giacomanni original one. When can I cut that down and
which
cover
one?
The base?
What are you talking about? This there, I don't
clematis,
know.
Clematis? Did you say
the clematis?
Oh, clematis. Okay, I didn't hear you say
still
that.
Flowering.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. That's really late. I would, you know, that's a very hardy cultivar of clematis, and you know, it's going to die back some anyways in the wintertime. With mine, I don't cut it back. I just cut it back in early spring.
Yeah,
and remove the dead material. I don't do it now.
Good luck, Kay. Thank you very much for calling. Let's go to Jay in Green Bay next. Jay, hi. Thank you for calling.
Thanks for taking my call. I have what I think is a scarlet hawthorn, and it has this year the leaves really were, you know, dead and dying on it. And taking a look at it and going a little internet search, it seems like it has scarlet hawthorn rust. And I was wondering if there's something I can do with to treat that.
So are you seeing kind of bright colored yellow or orangish spots on the leaves? About the size of a nickel or a dime?
Yeah, more than anything, the leaves were turning brown, you know, but there were some yellow spots on the top. And then when you flip the leaf over, it had the little,
little tendrils. Yeah, it looks like jellyfish tendrils coming off the bottom surface. You could very well have, it sounds like what we would generically call cedar apple rust. There are several actually different diseases in that group. And it could be cedar hawthorn rust. There's also a cedar quince rust. They're all very closely related diseases. What you have to keep in mind with that disease is that fungus requires two different hosts to complete its life cycle. And it requires both a hawthorn and then some sort of juniper. And particularly if you're in an area where there's a lot of red cedar, which is a type of juniper, that could be the alternate host for that particular fungus. So watch in the spring. And if you see these really orange gelatinous masses on some of your evergreens, some of the junipers, that could be the alternate phase of this particular fungus. And those gelatinous masses are producing the spores that are going to infect your hawthorn tree. And what you need to do is kind of decide whether you want to be a connoisseur of the junipers or a connoisseur of your hawthorn tree and try to remove one or the other of those two hosts. And if you can get the two hosts far enough apart, and again, the distance can be somewhat variable, but I've heard anywhere from 100 to 500 feet away. That can be very difficult in an urban setting. But if you can get the two hosts far enough apart, then you can disrupt the disease that way. It is a cosmetic disease in terms of if that's the only thing that you're dealing with. I would not expect that to cause a lot of damage to the tree. The fact that you're getting a lot of browning could be a function of a couple things. You may have another disease that you're dealing with, and I'm not sure exactly what that might be. Sometimes with the cedar apple rust, if it's really wet around the time when those gelatinous masses are forming on the junipers, you get so many infections per leaf on the hawthorn that will lead to leaf browning. And we did have a relatively wet year this year, so that may be what's going on. But I wouldn't expect that to recur every year. So at this point, I would just suggest good fall cleanup. If you know that you have red cedars, you can certainly look for the remnants of this disease at this time of the year. You'll see little galls, so little brown blobs that will form in the branches, and you can actually prune those off, and that will prevent some of those gelatinous masses from forming in the spring, and that can help reduce disease as well. There technically are fungicide treatments, but I usually don't recommend them for this particular disease. It's not a serious enough disease to warrant that.
Mm-hmm. There we go.
Because it did seem like this year was really bad. I mean, I've seen it, in the past. This year was really bad, and part of my problem is that the neighbor has a cedar fence. Let's call it cedar trees all along the back.
A hedge that they've. You're going to have to either talk to them, and they probably will not want to get rid of those shrubs.
So you either
live with the disease or decide that you want to replace that hawthorn with something else. Now, we do have some fact sheets on this disease if you're interested. You can go to my clinic website, which is pddc.wisc.edu, and there's a tab that says fact sheets. Just click on that and look for cedar apple rust.
So PDDC is Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic.
Yes, indeed.
So PDDC, and what is it? The rest?
.wisc.edu.
Okay.
And you can read up a little bit more. There's also contact information there. So if you need to follow up and contact me for more information, you can drop me an email.
All right.
Okay. Well, thanks for your opinion.
Yeah. Okay.
Thanks a lot, Jay, for calling. Appreciate your call. And we have Ken in Mayville. next. Hi, Ken.
How you doing? I have a question and then a comment. First question, I have a pear tree. It's in its whip stage, and I'm training it into a double cordon espalier.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering if it would be all right to cut it now so I can get the new branches coming in first thing in the spring, or should I wait till the dormant season on that?
I would wait. Wait till the new growth is leafed out and then start your espalier pruning. Espalier, for those who aren't familiar with it, is basically growing fruit trees or any tree flat at against a wall or against a fence. Mm-hmm. It's an old method of pruning that was done in colonial times where they wanted to grow fruit trees but had very limited space. The only thing is it's very, very high maintenance pruning. You have to keep it, you know, the shoots that are growing out, you have to prune them back so they're growing in a flattened plane. And plus they do fruit in the spring. So, you know, you might get if it's just a whip, you probably won't get any fruit for a while yet.
Yeah, not this year, yeah. Now, my comment, too, I have regarding the guy with black locust. Black locust is an incredibly hard wood. It is supposedly better than cedar as far as weatherability. A lot of old timers used to use mm-hmm. it for fence posts.
Fence posts, yep.
I actually use it for all my trellises. I have mm-hmm. 5 grapevines trellised very nicely on it, and I use it for my espalier as well.
Yeah, it's good use for it.
It's a fine. Yeah, it's a pretty wood, and if some people make furniture with it, it's very beautiful as well.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Cut down your black locust and use it for something else.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, use it on. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, thanks, yep. Ken. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. And Sarah in Milwaukee. Hi, thank you for calling.
Thank you. Say, I usually trim my evergreen bushes in the fall, but last fall when I trimmed them, they turned brown by spring, and mm-hmm. I thought they died. So I left them be all summer, and most of them came back and turned green.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm wondering, was that a mistake? When is the best time to trim evergreen bushes?
Okay, I'm not sure which evergreen bushes you have. But
well, yeah, they're woody, and they have those short, thin, soft needles.
Yeah, could they be yews or taxus yews?
I don't know.
Okay.
My plan.
Or maybe white cedar arborvitae if they're really soft.
Yeah.
They're really soft, needles and thin wood, very common in the neighborhood.
Yeah. Both, we recommend pruning evergreens. It depends on the evergreen. If it's like an arborvitae or a yew, for example, you prune them after the growth flush in spring. If you want to shape them. Fall is not the time to be pruning.
Oh.
Okay? For evergreens, all right? Now, with pines, for example, if you have some shrubby pines, you wait until the candle starts emerging in spring, which is that new growth. The needles are really, really short, and they haven't fully expanded yet. And you take about a third to a half of that candle, is what it's called, that new growth, off. You snap it off, and it will cause buds to form eventually closer to where you pruned it, and you'll get a bushier plant. This is what Christmas tree growers do all the time. Now, for yews and arborvitae, yeah, I would, you know, with yews, we always waited till the new growth flushed in spring. Then you would clip it back to the height where you want it. You don't want to cut it back to where it started. You want to leave some growth, new growth there. And then if it flushes again in the summertime, you know, prune that again to keep it in shape.
So when the light green needles start appearing, kind of shave them off?
Well, wait until they fully expand and the branch is elongated.
Oh, okay.
Okay. And then the browning that you're talking about was probably winter burn, and everybody had that. It was a bumper crop year for winter burn injury in this state, and that had nothing to do with your pruning. There were so many yews, and actually arborvitaes, some of them did very well last year. I was amazed visiting nurseries how their Techne arborvitaes, for example, were completely green, whereas their whole fields of boxwood and yews were all dead.
Yeah. And there were some folks who complained, you know, usually we recommended let the shrub try to re-leaf out or re-needle out. And in some cases they did, and others they didn't. So, and we saw a lot of that in the clinic as well. People sending in, particularly use with dead needles at the beginning of the spring, and it all seemed to be winter injury and not disease related.
With yews, they have adventitious buds farther back down on the stem. So by my neighbor's, hers was just brown as brown could be, and then she trimmed all that brown off, and it reflushed, and it looks fine now.
Yeah, good.
And I will mention that we do have fact sheets on pruning that
are offered
by Laura, and they are available on my clinic website as well. So if you go into the fact sheet section, there's one on how to prune evergreens, how to prune deciduous shrubs, and deciduous trees.
Excellent. Yeah, do that.
Thank you.
And what's that site again?
pddc.wisc.edu.
PDDC.
They're also available on the Wisconsin Urban Horticulture Team's website. That's another website that has lots and lots and lots of information.
Yep. And that's hort, H-O-R-T dot U-W-E-X dot E-D-U.
And I bet we have links to those on our Facebook page, I think. Well, Judith's going to check and see if we do. And thank you very much, Sarah, for calling. Appreciate your call. Visiting today with Brian Huddleston and Laura Jull. I'm Larry Mueller. Brian is director of the Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic at UW-Madison and Laura, professor and extension specialist for woody ornamentals in the Department of Horticulture at UW-Madison. Here for Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have you listening in on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. On this edition of Garden Talk, we're visiting about plant diseases and about woody ornamentals with our two guests, Brian Huddleston and Laura Jull. Join in with your questions. We have, our phone lines are all filled right now. The number is 800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. I'd certainly love to hear from you. That's our Facebook page, The Larry Mueller Show. Nancy in La Crosse up next with a question. Nancy, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Larry. It's a good Halloween question for Dr. Death and Spooktacular Laura. I have two pagoda dogwoods that I can best describe. They've been in the ground 4 years, healthy, and this year they both of them developed what I describe as like a rogue branch coming straight out of the middle, about 3-4 feet tall. And I'm not sure really what to do with that branch. Otherwise, they have this perfect umbrella shape.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, pagoda dogwoods are beautiful for their pagoda, like a Japanese pagoda. They have real horizontal branches all the way down. That shoot that's coming up from the middle, you can remove that at the base where it originated. You don't have to keep it if you don't want it. And that would help maintain the form of the tree.
Okay. Is that most apt to happen again? I mean, is it common for them to do that?
So I've seen some that did that, and you just prune it out if you want to maintain the form of the plant. Some people leave it. It's really up to you, but I would wait until late winter, early spring to do that.
Okay. All right. Thank you so much.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Thanks a lot for calling. Here's another dogwood-related question, I think. Lucy in Appleton, hi.
Good morning, Larry, Laura, and Brian. My question is about dogwoods. What type of pruning to do for red and yellow dogwood that has gotten too large and is spread to more clumps?
Okay.
Should I cut it to the ground or selectively prune? And is now the best time to prune? The leaves are mostly off.
Okay, Lucy. Best time, because they're the showiest in wintertime, I would wait until late winter, early spring to prune them, only because this time of year, red and yellow twig dogwoods are absolutely gorgeous, especially with snow. Now,
okay.
The type of pruning you do on those are several different types. One is called thinning pruning. And thinning pruning is where you're removing about a third of the largest diameter branches back to the base of the plant. Every year or every couple years, and that way you're allowing young sucker growth to come back up, because when dogwoods, when the diameter of the branches and the age of the branches get old, they're not as colorful as the newer growth that comes up from the root system. So that's one type of pruning you can do. because yellow and red twig dogwoods sucker like crazy, you actually can do a type of pruning called rejuvenation pruning, where you're cutting most of the plant, if not all the plant, back to within a couple inches of the ground, leaving some buds behind on the remaining shoots, and it will shoot right back up. Now, we don't recommend that type of pruning for most shrubs, only shrubs that sucker profusely from the root system that will come back. And again, you would do that late winter because all those carbohydrates are in the root system and they're just going to push lots of new growth that spring.
Okay, that's kind of what I thought, Laura, because I do have some, it really needs rejuvenation, mm-hmm. Because some have gotten way too big, and the dogwoods I'm speaking of have gotten so high, it's unbelievable. I don't know what happened.
Yeah.
They got away.
Yeah, they got away.
So I think I should, so I'll wait, I'll hold off until a cold, like maybe March.
Yeah. Yeah, enjoy the colorful branches for the winter.
Yeah, there you go. Thanks a lot, Lucy, for calling.
Thank you very much. I really enjoy your program.
Oh, thanks, Lucy.
And one other comment from a disease standpoint, dogwoods tend to be very prone to canker diseases.
Oh, boy.
So
yeah.
Keeping them thin properly is very, very important to help prevent those diseases because it tends to improve airflow in amongst the branches that keeps things drier, and then they're less likely to become infected by these fungi that will cause these canker diseases.
Good point. You never want to shear those red and yellow twig dogwoods. Never, never, never shear them with like electric head shears because you open up wounds and the canker fungi can move in.
They're pretty much canker magnets from my mind.
Laura and Keel, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. My husband and I have a cabin on a small lake outside of Lakewood, Wisconsin, and it's totally surrounded by winterberry bushes, which really bloom and produce red berries profusely. But we have kind of a puzzling situation because within, I'd say the last 6 years, two of those years, we usually harvest them after the leaves are off sometime around the middle of October so that it's just berries and branches. And two of those years, the berries were totally gone. They were full of berries in September, and the berries were all gone off the branches in October.
Yeah. Okay.
You're so puzzled.
Well, there's two things that could be going on. That happened at my house. I have some winter berries, and one year I had not a single berry, and I'm going, what's going on here?
Yeah.
And what happened was, first of all, the birds will eat the fruit, and if they're hungry, they will eat the fruit off winter berries earlier than normal, especially, I don't know, sometimes I think the birds that don't migrate, they know that it's a bad winter is coming and they gobble up as much as they can. The second thing is pollination. If you didn't see any berries at all, I've noticed because they have separate sexes, male plants and female plants, you have to have both, obviously, to get fruit. But last year, I didn't have any fruit on mine, and it was right around when they were flowering, the time of year when they're pollinated. If it was very hot and dry, or if it was cool and wet, right when the flowers were flowering, the pollinators may not have gotten to them to pollinate those flowers, and that could be a result in a bad year of fruiting. I do see that on other plants as well.
Mm. Yeah, because when we drive up to our cabin, we also drive on Highway 64 east of Highway 32, and there, too, along the highway, they're just loaded with winterberries. Mm-hmm. In the same years when they're not on our lake in October, they're not on Highway 64 either.
Mm-hmm. Oh, interesting.
So, which made me wonder about the birds, eating them in two different places, totally gone.
Yeah. Or they fall off. That can happen,
they just
too.
Fall off.
Especially during drought, if it's a very, very dry year, they will drop.
But the crucial time is when they're flowering.
For pollination.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What about disease with winter berries? Anything,
Brian?
Some
leaf diseases occasionally that we see, and they're pretty cosmetic problems. We did have one year a sample that came in where we did recover verticillium. It had a lot of branch dieback. And we were never able to formally document that, but we did recover something that looked like verticillium. But I don't consider that plant a real great host for that particular fungus. Mm-hmm. So I think the main thing you're going to see is a little leaf browning from some of the fungal leaf spots.
Oh. And Laura, with your winter berries, do you make jam or something with them? Are they...
No. Decoration for
just
Christmas.
Totally... Oh, okay, totally. I wondered. Yeah, because
they're partially poisonous.
Yeah, I had never heard of anybody eating them.
No,
I haven't either.
They're, you know, winterberries, actually hollies. There's actually a holly called Ilex vomitoria. I love
what
that
a great name.
Yeah, and those some they won't kill you, but they will make you vomit.
Make you wish you were dead.
Yeah. And winterberry, it's not something you want to make jam out of.
Okay, good.
No. Well, they do last all winter long in the house if you're decorating with them. They're
They're beautiful.
Yeah.
There we go. Thanks, Laura.
Thank you.
Appreciate the call. Rebecca in Black River Falls, what can we do for you?
Well, last weekend I noticed on one of my rose bushes, and it was only on one side of the rose bush, what looked like mold. And it's not affecting any of my other bushes, and I was just wondering if it's something I need to worry about.
Mm-hmm. What color was this growth that you were seeing?
White.
Whitish. It could be powdery mildew. Some varieties of roses are quite susceptible. It's a fungal disease. It's usually pretty cosmetic, although on some rose varieties that are really susceptible, it can cause some leaf loss. And particularly if it's an older variety, it may never have been bred for resistance to the disease. If you're just seeing a little bit of it, what I would do is after the leaves come off the plants, just make sure you're very diligent about removing those leaves. It's one of the places where this particular fungus will overwinter, is in that leaf litter. And if you remove that, you're removing a lot of the fungus. It can survive on occasion in some of the overwintering buds, so that you may still have some of the fungus around. I would just watch it. You may want to do some pruning of the shrub to open up the canopy. That'll increase airflow and reduce humidity, and that disease tends to be more of a problem when it's very humid. And if you've got dense, packed leaves on a shrub, that can increase the humidity. And if it really gets very bad, there certainly are fungicide treatments that you can use. One of the recommendations that we have is a kind of a baking soda horticultural oil mix that you could potentially use. But I would hold off on that right now because it doesn't sound like you're seeing a really severe case of the disease. And quite frankly, if it becomes a chronic problem, then I think that's a situation where I would get rid of the shrub and replace it with a newer variety that has some resistance.
Mm-hmm.
And do good fall cleanup.
Yeah, definitely.
Any of the leaves leaves you need to get rid of. Don't leave them around the base of the plant because they can serve as inoculum for next year.
Don't leave your leaves.
And that's pretty much a general recommendation for leaf diseases in general, is just get rid of that leaf litter because that's where these fungi tend to overwinter.
Thanks, Rebecca, for calling. Therese in Green Bay. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hello. I have a question about some winter die-off. I have two verbrunum. I don't know what variety they are. And they didn't leaf out completely, but they didn't die. And so, and mostly like two-thirds from the base is where they didn't leaf out. Should I trim them back?
Okay.
And if so, when?
All right.
And they didn't flower either.
Okay. There's could be a number of things wrong here. It could be viburnums that aren't hardy in your area. And I have seen some, unfortunately, some of the big box stores, which I won't name, are selling plants that really are not hardy in our area. Second thing it could be, it really depends on the type of viburnum, is viburnum borer. And viburnum borer is an insect. It lays its eggs at the base of the plant, and the eggs hatch, and the larvae feed on the internal parts of the water-conducting tissue, and it will kill the whole plant. So that's one thing to determine if it has viburnum borer. And I would get a sample. Green Bay, you have V.J. Pandian. He's at the Brown County UW Extension Office. And I'm trying to remember the name of the street it's on.
Bellevue,
thank you.
Oh, yes, I know where it is.
Yeah, I would take probably, you know, if they look so bad, I would dig it up and then, you know, bring it to him to see if there's viburnum borer injury. And then the third thing is when to prune. Well, viburnums, which are some of my very favorite plants, there's so many of them, they bloom in spring. And if you prune them now, you'll be removing flower buds. That's, you know, you can do it in late winter, early spring, but realize you're sacrificing some flowers, or just wait until right after it's done.
There you go. Thanks, Therese, for calling. Appreciate your call. And let's turn to Diane in Elkhart Lake. Diane, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi, thank you.
Yes, I have two questions. One is about some of the winter burn. I have some boxwood. Some of them have kind of come back, but there's maybe branches that are just didn't. So I probably ought to prune the dead ones out.
Yeah.
Will they fill in then?
With boxwoods, they will. It'll take a couple years for them to fill in. It's not a quick fix. I mean, last year was the worst year of winter burn I have ever seen in my life. It was just horrible.
Yeah, and then I have some hemlock trees, and the branches that were at the bottom that were covered with snow all winter did fine, but everything above that just got burned up.
Yep.
But the little, the tiniest little green, you know, needle here and needle there are coming, but, you know, basically they still look dead.
Yeah.
Most of it looks dead, but since they do have some new growth all over the place, but just very sparse, will they eventually come back?
Okay. If the stems don't have any green tissue on there, I would prune that out because that'll take so long to fill back in. However, with shrub hemlocks, and there's a lot of them, if they have some dieback, remove the dead material. They have latent buds farther back down on the stem that will break and fill in, but it'll take years. So it really depends on whether you like the look of bare branches or you want to prune it to make it look like it's showy. Now, these are trees. You don't ever want to top the trees. You don't want to take it down and just have a, you know, half of a tree. That would not look good. What you could do is if the top of the plant is dead, the bottom part is alive, you can prune out that material back to live wood. And then what will happen is one of the lateral branches you can stake up and it will become the new central leader.
There you go. Thank you very much for that call. Visiting with Brian Huddleston, director of the Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic at the University of Wisconsin-Madison in the Department of Plant Pathology, and Laura Jowell, associate professor and extension specialist for woody ornamentals in the Department of Horticulture at UW-Madison, on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. Well, keeping a garden healthy and thriving takes a lot of work, but there are ways to identify and treat many diseases before they can do much damage. And by carefully selecting the types of plants for your garden, you can help the process along pretty much there on the preventive side. Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network for another edition of Garden Talk. Visiting today with Laura Jowell, associate professor and extension specialist for woody ornamentals in the UW-Madison Department of Horticulture, and Brian Huddleston, who directs the Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic at UW-Madison. Welcome. Thank you both for being with us, by the way.
Yeah, thanks for having us today.
Thank you.
Diseases and woody ornamentals on our minds. And boy, I tell you what, we've had plenty of questions about woody ornamental pruning, haven't we, today?
Yeah, quite a bit. That's all right.
Yeah, that's
I'm okay. The tree hugger.
Well, Dr. Death here is wondering, are there any diseases left that we can talk about?
Oh, there are lots of diseases. So little time, so many diseases, let me tell you. Anybody have a Norway with tar spots? A Norway maple with tar spot? I'm sure there's some
or
of that
spruce,
out there. So.
Spruce with rhizosphere.
Rhizosphere needle cast. Yeah, you got it.
There you go. Well, Dan in Turtle Lake has something, so let's go there. Hi, Dan. Thank you for calling.
Yes, sir. I have a very bountiful mountain ash. I mean, the robins are just going crazy this fall on the berries, and it's right on the on lakeshore. Now, I brought many small trees from Racine, Wisconsin, that were, and I don't know how they were planted, but I take it they were planted from a neighbor with a mountain ash. And what I'm interested in is I picked some of these berries, and can I plant them directly, or do they have to go through the a digestive system of these robins or other birds?
That's a good question, Dan. I'm not totally sure if they need to have what's called scarification, where they're roughed up the seed coat, typically going through the digestive tract of an animal or bird. I don't know. Mountain ash seeds are small. They're not real big, so I think they don't need that, but I'm not positive. To really find out for sure, there's an awesome online source, and if I don't have the web address, but if you Google USDA Forest Service, and then woody plant seed manual. Again, it's woody plant seed manual. It's by the Forest Service. And I actually authored a chapter in that book, but not on a plant that can grow here. But they have all these different chapters based on the genus. And the genus you're looking for mountain ash is Sorbus. S as in Sam, O-R, B as in boy, U-S, Sorbus. And it talks specifically on how to propagate various Native American or even European trees, but just by seed. But if it's a known cultivar of mountain ash, you would want to plant it or propagate it vegetatively through cuttings or other way. I'm not sure how commercially mountain ash is propagated, if they use cuttings or grafting. But look at the woody plant seed manual online first, and they will tell you specifically how to propagate the plant.
There you go. Good luck. Thanks a lot, Dan, for calling. Gay in rural Partyville, hi to you. Thank you for calling.
Thank you for accepting my call. I have several questions. I have three pear trees. One had no flowers whatsoever this spring. The second one had maybe 20. And the third one bloomed and bore prolifically. However, all of the pears were twisted looking. And I'm wondering what might cause that. Instead of looking pear-shaped, they had kind of a twist to them.
Yeah, the distortion in the fruits, so did they look kind of bumpy and kind of just generally ugly?
They look ugly. They taste wonderful, mm-hmm. but there's a lot of waste.
Yeah, I suspect that that's probably an insect problem. There are certain insects that will lay eggs in the fruits, and that will cause kind of a dimple. And then as the fruits continue to get larger, that causes them to get very bumpy and look very, very odd. What you might want to do, if you have a digital camera and still have some of the fruits left and can take some pictures, you could certainly get them to me, and I can get them to our insect diagnostician for him to take a look at, and then he can comment more specifically on what it might could be the problem. Is that a possibility?
They're all off the tree. This is the first year that they've ever tree ripened. Usually I pick them green and ripen them in brown paper bags, and come out just fine.
Sure.
But all of them were, twisted, and then they dropped off. And they're still good tasting. Right now I'm dehydrating them.
Okay. Yeah, if you don't have any that you can take pictures of, what I would do is I can, if you want to send me a message, let me just give you my phone number, and you can give me a call, and we can talk a little bit more offline. And I need to get you into contact with our insect diagnostician, but I don't want to give his phone number off online or over the air without his permissions. But you're welcome to give me a call. It's
608-262-2863.
Right.
Okay, have one other question. The pear tree that did not have any blossoms or any fruit is about maybe 12 feet from a black walnut tree. And I understand that they give off juglans or some such thing.
Juglans.
I don't know if that caused that, and I'm thinking of moving it. And I'm wondering, how close could you plant a fruit tree to a black walnut, or if you can't plant it at all, how close could you plant nut trees?
Unfortunately, depending upon the size of the walnut tree, you have to worry about where the roots are going. And the roots of a tree can go anywhere from roughly 3 to 5 times the height of the tree away from the trunk. And so you're talking potentially a very long distance away from the trunk of that tree. You could potentially have these toxin issues. Now, you're going to get a spread of the roots as they get farther and farther from the trunk. And so there may be large areas where you won't have a problem, but it's hard to predict where those areas might be. So if you've got a walnut, anything that's particularly sensitive, I would keep away from that tree a long, long distance.
There you go.
That explains why I'm having some problems and some issues. I've moved several shrubs, flowering and fruiting shrubs, and now I'm moving trees because I have a feeling that the black walnut is kind of getting to them.
It may very well be. If you do have access to the internet, we talked about my clinic website. We do have a fact sheet on black walnut toxicity that talks a little bit about what's going on and also provides some information on what plants you might be able to plant near that tree. You might want to check that out. And again, if you don't have access, if you give me a call, I can talk to you about getting you a copy of that in the mail.
Okay, that would be wonderful. Thank you so very much.
You're welcome.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. And Caleb in Lancaster, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. Say, I have an invasive species on my property, my hunting property. My land used to be wide open, and now it's a bush-like plant. I'm not sure what it is. It does have berries. Late in the year, the leaves don't fall off of it. They're really, really light green, and I just don't know. You know, they've spread from one hill down the valley up the next hill, and they're coming on the other down the other valley. And I don't know if there's anything I can do to stop that, or
well,
I just have to cut them out of there.
Yeah, it could be a couple different species, and really knowing which species it is would really be beneficial. Sending pictures to us would help, especially close-up of buds and fruit and leaves. It could be the invasive shrub honeysuckles, and there's several of them. It also could be buckthorn, which also has berries. What color are the berries?
Like a dark purple.
Dark purplish black.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's probably buckthorn, and that is horribly invasive plant. The birds eat the fruit, they fly away, they deposit the seed,
uh-huh.
And up comes another one, and it is a real a real trick trying to get rid of it if it's really really over a large area. What the best time to take care of it is actually right now with buckthorn and honeysuckle is to cut it right at the base of the plant and then immediately treat it with a systemic herbicide. Garlon 4 works good. Roundup can be used. But realize this is going to be a several year long process because they tend to resprout from the root system. And so that's why, and I'm not a huge fan of, you know, myself to use pesticides, and I have nothing against them. I used to do that for a living, and I really want to reduce my pesticide exposure. But when it comes to invasive plants, buckthorn, you try to dig that up, good luck. It is some of the hardest thing to dig up. Versus honeysuckle shrubs, those come out much easier. So with buckthorn, we recommend cut the base and then immediately spray it, and then you'll get more and more seedlings coming up the following year. So this is going to be a several year long process, and then you go in and replant with some natives.
Unfortunately, that's an unfortunate fact of life with buckthorn.
It's awful.
And thanks a lot for calling. I want to go to my Facebook page, Brian, because we've got listener Josh in Duluth. We have this photo, and his comment is, my white pine has some white powder on some of the branches. Got good photos here, very healthy otherwise. And any idea what that might be?
Yeah, from what I'm seeing on the whitish material in the branch, it looks perhaps like a little bit of dried sap that's oozed out of the branches. That might indicate a little bit of insect activity. And interestingly, part of producing pitch like that or sap is actually a defense mechanism to keep insects from getting in. One of the photos I see a little larger area that looks kind of roughened, and there's some dead needles that look like they're attached to that particular branch. That makes me a little bit more concerned about a disease called white pine blister rust. That fungus oftentimes will infect through needles, and then when it gets back to the branches, it will kill the entire circumference of the branch, and the branch will die. I can't tell for certain, though, from the photos whether that's what it is. I'd have to see a sample of that in the clinic to verify that. And it might be so early in the infection process that even if I saw the branches in the lab, I might not be able to tell for certain. And he's from Minnesota, did you say?
Not sure. We don't have a...
Oh, don't have a location. Okay. But certainly, if you want to check out my website and talk to me, again, there's a section on my website where you can send me messages, and we can chat back and forth on what that might be. But one of the branches, I think, is more likely a little bit of insect activity. The other one, though, I'm a little bit more nervous about.
All right. There we go. Thanks again for that photo. It's great
they
shots.
They are great photos. Yeah,
yeah. Great photos.
It's just sometimes with diseases, it's hard to do the diagnosis with a photo.
Marvin in Judah, thanks for calling. Hi.
Hi. I have two questions related to a butternut tree. One is if they develop the poisons through the roots where they poison the soil, and another about pruning it.
Okay. Butternut is related to black walnut, is the genus Juglans. It's instead of Juglans nigra, it's Juglans cinerea. And yes, it contains quite a bit of juglone in the roots, the fruit, the leaves, the twigs. So you're going to have the same problems with trying to grow stuff near it. And
That's what I was wondering.
Yeah, yeah. And it's a real treasure that you have a butternut because of butternut canker, which has pretty much wiped out most of the butternuts in this state. It's absolutely horrible disease.
Definitely, that's one of the things that makes basically is limited your ability to grow butternuts anymore. And if you've got one, you are very lucky.
Yeah.
What's the best time of year to prune them?
Dormant season, late winter, early spring, before it leaves out.
So it could be pruned now then.
I wouldn't. Not I yet. Would wait.
Wait, you don't want to lose it.
Well, and the reason why sometimes, and this doesn't happen with every species, but I have seen with some, especially shrub species, if you do a lot of heavy pruning in the fall, you might have further dieback during winter time. And so I always just say, you know, do it in late winter, early spring.
Yeah,
you know, December is fine. You can do it in December, but I wouldn't do it necessarily right now.
And I'm always worried if there is any warm weather. I mean, we're getting pretty cold, but it's still above freezing. And with a butternut, the butternut canker organism could potentially be in an area and active. And if you're providing open wounds, that's a potential entry point for that particular fungus, and you don't want that at all.
No. There we go. Good luck, Marvin. Thank you very much for calling. Let's give Mike in Oshkosh a chance to join us. Mike, hi. Thank you for calling. Mike, are you there? Well, awesome. Let's try Diane in Sheboygan. Diane, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thank you for taking it. I have a question about fungal diseases. I had a lot of fungal disease this year, and I wanted to know, I read several gardening magazines, and they always will have an article, oh, you should clean up everything in the fall, and then the next article I read, oh, no, you should leave that because it helps the crowns of the plants over winter, and you should just clean up in the spring. So I'm just wondering, with all the fungal disease, what is really the answer?
Yeah, from a disease standpoint, you could do either, as long as you're removing the material before the plants start to resprout in the spring. I do understand the comments about if you leave some of that litter on the ground, it can provide some insulation during the wintertime, and that can be important. The problem with a lot of folks is that in the spring, they have the best intentions and are going to remove that material, but then they don't. And I certainly ran into that myself in my yard one fall. I did not rake in the fall. I said I was going to do it in the spring. I didn't get around to it. And I ended up with just a ton of tar spot on my maple trees. So you do run a risk that if you don't get that material off early enough in the spring, that you will continue to keep these diseases going, because a lot of the fungal pathogens will survive in that old leaf material.
And especially with certain shrubs like roses, I recommend getting rid of that material around the base of the plant for a couple of reasons. One, voles. Voles like to get in underneath leaf litter. They look like a mouse, and they chew on the bark of the canes of roses. I had this happen in my rose research trials.
Oh, boy.
Those little buggers took out 40% of my trial, which was just awful. The second thing is, especially with roses, if the crown stays too wet, with especially like oak and maple leaves that pack together, you'll rot those canes. Now, people are probably saying, well, I protect my roses in the wintertime. Yeah, you can do that, but I would use loose material like pine needles, for example, something that's not going to mat and pack down, something that you do need to remove in early spring.
Yeah, there we go. Thanks, Diane. Don in Manawa. Hello, thank you for calling.
Hi. Say, I've been saving some seeds from a nuts, I should say, from a chestnut tree and some seeds from a plum tree for about, I guess, almost 3 years in a sealed up mason jar in my refrigerator. Kind of wondering if I, how I could get them to sprout in the spring.
Okay. The chestnut, I don't know. A lot of nut species don't have long seed viability because they're high in oils. And I know with oaks in particular, they don't last more than a year for seed viability. Their viability goes down substantially, even in the refrigerator. So I can't comment if they'll germinate or not. This is where, again, I'll recommend that Woody Plant Seed Manual. It's online for free. You can look up the various species based on the genus. And for chestnut, it's called Castanea. It's capital C, A, S as in Sam, T, A, N, E, A. I think that's how you spell it. For plum, the genus is Prunus, P, R, U, N, U, S. And with one thing about plums, if you're planting the seed, you're not going to get the same cultivar because plums are typically cultivars or varieties that are that have been bred, and to propagate those, you typically are grafted, and by seed, you're not going to get the same cultivar every time, and that has to do with sexual reproduction. But
this is an ancient plum tree, and it was huge, so I'm thinking maybe it could be before there was a lot of hybrids. I don't know.
Nah, they've been hybridizing plum fruit trees for a very long time.
Yeah, if you plant them and get the trees, just don't expect. Sometimes you get really great stuff from the seeds, but other times you don't. So. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Again, it's online, the Woody Plant Seed Manual by the USDA Forest Service.
All right. Thanks.
U.S. Forest Service, I
Thanks
should
say. A lot for calling. Email from Denise, who has a weeping cherry tree. It's developed a very long crack below the graft. What causes a tree to crack like this, and should or can I do anything for this tree?
Oh, boy. This is such a common question we see. I'm not sure where you're from, but weeping cherries, most of them aren't really reliably hardy here. We have a lot of winter injury on the weeping Higgin cherry, for example. If you're in the southern part of the state, especially Milwaukee, Kenosha area, you can grow it there. The cracking you're seeing, people refer to it as frost crack, and it really is often due to a couple issues. One, the tree was planted too deep, and there's no root flare exposed. You have some internal trunk injury that you don't see that started below the ground, and it's worked its way up the tree. Other factors, flush cutting, where you're cutting roots or branches too close to the trunk, you need to protect that branch collar area when pruning. And what happens is I've seen this on maples, I've seen this on many, many different types of thin bark species. And it usually occurs on the southwest side of the tree. Not always, but that's the most common side that you see it. What can you do about it? Not much. The tree's going to try to close the wound. Trees do not heal. We heal our cuts. Trees close the wound. The wound will always be there, but it'll be internal inside the tree. And you can water the plant and, you know,
do as best you can to keep it as healthy as possible. And that's about all you can do.
Yeah.
Well, and that's about all we can do. Thank you both so much for being with us today. The time flew by, Brian and Laura, and we'll look forward to your next visit. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Larry.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Laura Jaw from the Department of Horticulture, Brian Huddleston from the Department of Plant Pathology at the UW-Madison, our guest. Thank you for listening. Peter Green joins me on Monday to talk about computers and computer software. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.